Hi, it's Jeff Robbins here with Lullabot podcast number 81. This week, we have a live recording from the Do It With Drupal conference. Each year, we have a panel of Do It With Drupal speakers get up and answer questions from the audience, and we put it out as a podcast. We had a minor problem with the recording this year, and my microphone wasn't recorded correctly. It gets picked up through the room mics, but it sounds a little bit different than everyone else, and we apologize for that. We've done what we can to compress the levels and make everything sound okay. But anyways, here's the recording from the Do It With Drupal conference this month. December 11th, 2009. It's sort of a Lullabot podcast kind of a thing live from the Do It With Drupal conference in New Orleans, Louisiana. It does add a level of excitement, doesn't it?
It does.
You know, some people do podcasts and they don't have intro music at all. I know.
Those people suck.
They lack imagination.
I just did some intro music for the Linux Journal podcast. LinuxJournal.com. They've got a podcast, and now it has cool music by me, which makes it extra cool. Hi, I'm Jeff Robbins, and I've got a big panel of Drupal experts up here at the front of the room, and we're going to answer questions from the audience and talk about the Drupal conference that just happened here in New Orleans. Let's first start by introducing the panel from Nederland, Colorado.
This is Nate Haug from Lullabot.
And Josh Koenig from Chapter 3.
In San Francisso.
Oh, yes.
I got this idea, like,
dressed up as RuPaul.
You know, where are you from? Where are you from, Emma?
Emma Hogben. I'm from Owen Sound, which is a small town in the Canadia. And here with HickTech.
I'm Angie Byron, also with Lullabot, and I hail from Montreal.
I'm Ryan Zarama from Louisville, Kentucky, with Commerce Guys.
And I'm Alec Hendry from MTV from London.
I'm Paul Reeves, also from MTV in London.
We got the MTV guys. That's fun, right? MTV. Yeah. Remember from when you were a kid?
When we used to play music videos, I know.
Yeah. Good conference. Fun stuff. What was your favorite part, Angie?
At lunch today, I was sitting with some people, and I said I wanted to learn new music, and so we took out my analog notebook pad, and we passed it around the table, and everybody wrote down awesome music to listen to. So I liked it because it proved that Twitter sucks.
She's trying to move beyond.
Okay. That makes perfect sense. Ryan, how was conference for you?
Oh, well, I recommended Avril Lavigne to WebChick at lunch today.
So this is
and I threatened to kill him.
I had a great time, though. Met a lot of cool people and learned some new things from Rob Purdy, from Greg Knadison, and others. Places that I just don't normally go with my Drupal experience. So. I also lost my voice on Bourbon Street.
Yeah, it sounds like a song. I lost my voice on Bourbon. So how about you guys from London down there? You came the furthest of the people on the panel, at least.
Yeah, the hurricanes were good. And
it's a drink.
Yep,
that's
a drink, right
here, yes.
And that's about all I remember from last night. So. But the Ubercart session yesterday was great. First chance I had to, you know, to look through that, and it was really good.
Cool. Well, I don't know. How should we do this? If anybody has any questions about pretty much anything, including Drupal, get up on the mic, or especially if there are any sessions, anything you just want to comment on, we'll just keep talking up here with no particular agenda. If you,
it's going to be really awkward if you don't stand up to the.
Hi, what's your name? Where are you from?
My name's...
Sorry to interrupt. We have, as incentive for you guys to get up and ask questions, we have prizes for the best question askers. We have two gift certificates for Komodo IDE. Yeah, that's some good IDE action. Right here. So those are there. We have a bunch of Lullabot DVDs and some T-shirts. What are these T-shirts?
Linux Journal T-shirts.
Linux Journal T-shirts and some Linux Journal calendars. You get a prize just for being first. So what's that? IDE. It's a integrated development environment. Komodo IDE. Are you from Active State? Is that why you're asking? This is a little bit of SEO. No. Let me explain to you. It's an editor. Well, I don't know if you would really value it if you don't. It's an editor. How would you describe
it? Basically, it's an application for writing code, and it's got your text editor, your function reference, your debugger, all of this stuff sort of built
in. Source control integration.
Source control.
If you're writing any code, web development code, it is both super and duper.
It's my IDE of choice.
It might help to compare it to Eclipse, only it's not free, right?
Except you can actually get debugging working in Komodo.
Yeah. So. It's sort of like nice. Eclipse, but it works.
And because it's not free, you can purchase licenses with UberCart on a Drupal store.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They use UberCart. Yeah.
So there is a lightweight version of it as well.
You, sir.
What's it called?
What's your question?
Okay, my name's Elijah Lin, and my first question of the night is probably directed towards Emma, I think. And I'm still having a tough time conceptualizing what arguments are, and she does really good analogies.
Really good fights is what I do. No, wait, that different kind of argument.
I'm here for an argument. I'd like to buy an argument.
That's basically my question. So okay. I have in Vues, there's basically this big hodgepodge of arguments, options, and stuff to fill in. And I just was looking for a simple, something to click in my brain to get what they are. Somebody told me earlier they were kind of like filters, like advanced filters. But if you could go for it.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I did have some pretty decent analogies yesterday involving peanut butter, tomato, and mayonnaise sandwiches. seriously, so I'm trying to come up with one that's equivalent to that, which would give you an argument. I guess an argument. Have you seen Labyrinth? Have you seen the movie Labyrinth?
You should.
Please.
Oh, come on.
So homework number one for today.
It's like Jim Henson and David Bowie.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
It's like in the early '80s.
I actually did see it, but it was awesome. Probably when I was about 10.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Okay.
See it again, because it's really a lot less cool than you thought.
So the doors analogy won't work on that one. But it essentially, okay, so if we look at the back of the room there, there's four doors, and depending on what door you choose to go through, there's a completely different world on the other side. And that's essentially what an argument does, is it lets you decide which of those doors you're going to go through.
So are we just blowing people's minds on this thing? Is that what's happening?
Nobody's
would
tired.
Would you like a DVD of some type? Choice of what we have here?
No, wait, there's about to be an argument. Webkick's about to disagree.
The follow-up.
A less metaphorical but more technical way to think of it is in... I don't know if this is going to help you either. I think of arguments at their core as they're pieces of the URL. So each part of a URL that is divided by a slash is you can grab in Drupal with this handy arg command that gets used and abused because it's so handy. And Vues implements this in a sort of augmented and more powerful way that says, let me build a view with a URL and then leave some holes in that URL that could be filled by something, like a node
ID. Like a taxonomy
ID
term.
Or a taxonomy term ID. And then let me change filter the view based on whatever fills in that blank.
You know, I'm going to choose which DVD you get. This video is called Learning Views.
and there's no Bowie in it.
It happens to talk about arguments and views in particular. But yes, Drupal arguments are basically the things between the slashes. Slash something is an argument, slash, slash, slash.
Yeah, and like, you use a filter when you always want it to be the same. Like, I always want to only show articles. So I'm always going to filter by no type as article. And argument is where you don't know until you're actually showing the view what you want to filter by. So for, say, for example, I want to filter by a taxonomy term, but I want to do it when I'm actually looking at the term page. Say I want a block that comes up that shows me all of the nodes that are tagged with that term. I don't know at the time what, you know, unless I make separate filters for every single taxonomy term in my whole system. So I can just stick an argument in there, which is like, as Josh was saying, just a placeholder that says something's going to go in here. Whatever comes in here, figure out from there what to query. So I think of arguments as dynamic filters as opposed to filters, which are more static.
You can see them demoed on the Dretzi site yesterday. No longer.
Yeah. Just take a... actually, it will be on the video archive. I should mention the Drupal video archive. We've video taped all of the sessions from this event. So there's basically three tracks for people who are listening on the podcast and didn't actually come. So we had three tracks. And of course, the difficult thing for people who actually come here is deciding which thing to go to at any given time. And so we put up the video archive for everyone who has attended, gets access to the video archive. And you can basically go to two more conferences at home. If that's something you want to do, and watch all of the other videos, and then we'll also put them up for sale for people who did not get to come to the conference. So, next.
Hey guys, my name is James. I'm from California. I have a question for you guys. It's for anybody, for all of you actually. I don't want you to be PC about it. I want you to be snobby, and I don't want it to be, you know,
Ron Paul.
The most logical answer, Joomla. Either. Actually, related to that, why is Drupal better than Joomla and WordPress in the most snobbiest way possible?
In a snobby way. So I'm gonna start by just saying I don't know that any of us are particularly, maybe you guys are might be most qualified to answer that. But I would say for most of us, there's sort of this process where you kind of make a decision at some point. You sort of make an evaluation. You go like, I'm going to go with Drupal, and then you sort of jump over the fence. And it depends. The fence has gotten lower with Drupal, but when I got over the fence, it was a very, very high fence. You know, that learning curve to just get up and over there. And once I was over, man, I just couldn't look back. You know, it was like, I could tell you why Drupal is good, but to tell you, like, specifically, comparatively, the other things, you know, I mean, like, I know Jeff Eaton for a while was using WordPress for his blog, specifically just to sort of keep up with what was going on, and he keeps track of Joomla a lot, too. Maybe we can get him up to come up and answer. Anybody feel actually qualified to answer?
I had a very interesting conversation with Josh and Eaton. It may have been late, and there may have been bourbon involved.
There was plenty of bourbon involved before we started doing comparative CMS evaluations.
And ultimately, what we ended up coming to the conclusion of is that for every single client that we work with, there's a system that is appropriate. And for some of those people, it's not even a web-based content management system. It's an email service provider. So it depends on what the goals of the business are and what the strengths of the content management or this each of the pieces of technical software are. Certainly, I've got some clients that I install Drupal for because I can do it really, really quickly. And within a week, I kind of regret it because it's way too much power for the tasks that they're trying to accomplish. Versus Joomla versus the other ones, yeah, they're all good if it matches what you need.
I know that wasn't as bigoted as you wanted.
Yeah, I was looking for an argument.
I'll satisfy what you're asking for.
Josh may have had some bourbon, so he's been practicing.
Exactly. I've been working on this for a while. No, but so... The problem with Joomla is The problem with Joomla is... No. So if you saw Dries' presentation from before, when he was sending email to Jeremy Andrews back in 2001, and they were dealing with PHP Nuke and other stuff, is that many of these systems have a legacy of code that is not as well architected as Drupal. And I'm not saying that Joomla is bad, but its interior systems for handling what it does are nowhere near as well structured as our code is. They also have significant problems with the way in which their community functions because they've made a decision to monetize individual modules. And that's created a lot of unhealthy back and forth in their community. I was just in New York and they had a simultaneously planned for a Drupal
Jeff is
pre-party.
Jumping up and down in excitement.
a Drupal pre-party and a Joomla conference after party. And the Joomla people are, they're like tired and sad and not happy about what they're doing. And they like their platform and it empowers them, but like the way in which their internal developer community functions is in some ways dysfunctional because I think of these early decisions that were made that seemed logical at the time about how
Amy Stevens, we know you're listening, and we don't mean you.
Yeah, no, it's not. And then from the other side, WordPress is actually much better, but it's very simple. And if you don't, if WordPress doesn't meet your use case and you start extending WordPress, you're forking WordPress, and then you own it.
Hey. If I can jump in, just because I'm an opinionated person, it really is about that. I mean, in Joomla, there's a big ecosystem of people trying to solve very, very carefully architected silo problems. I need a rateable image gallery that I can drop in, and now people who come to my site can do X. Or I need this functionality. You drop it in, you put it in, and then it's up to, you know, some sort of person who's building your website to sort of stitch those together. There are differences, but at least culturally, that's where the emphasis on lots of work goes into in the Joomla community. In WordPress, it's about a blogging tool that you drop it in and it just works, and it's highly polished and is great at that. And then there are things that people have sort of built on top of that. In Drupal, there's a strong emphasis on like, hey, giant bin full of Lego blocks, build your special thing, and then a themer will make it not look like crap. That's my opinion.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thanks. There you go. And if you want to quote some of those... outlandish things. That's Josh Koenig. when you tweet it, are you Outlandish Josh?
Outlandish Josh on Twitter.
On Twitter, yeah. Incidentally, Ben Finkley interjects via Twitter, Drupal is also the best platform on the planet for SEO.
Hey. Okay. Hi, I'm Laura from Ohio. We've been using Drupal for about 5 months now, and we're at the point where we've got this list of microsites that we want to create. So that's like new content types and pages and menus and images. And I'm curious, what's the most efficient way to move that from our test site to our production site?
Anybody?
I'm going to go hide under the table.
You don't want us to talk about something we hate or we love? The best way to... say again? Sorry.
The most efficient way to move all of that new stuff over to the production site.
Yeah. Was it...
Were you
Josh,
in the features?
One that did the... no, it was...
Jeff from...
What's that?
But, are you thinking of the features presentation or something?
Well, there's features is fascinating. There's a really interesting video, the Migrate module. Not to be confused with Backup and Migrate module, but there's a really cool video out there. I can't tell if people are just coughing or actually expressing opinions. But the Migrate module, which is something that Palantir was working on.
Oh, Deploy.
Deploy. And by Migrate, I mean Deploy. It's been a long conference. I did a little bit of drinking last night.
Yeah, there's the Deploy module, which focuses on... basically content. What it does is it assigns like a unique identifier to everything in your database. So your nodes, your users, your comments, and stuff like that. And then it can tell based on whether or not that ID exists over here, whether or not that content has been synced over. And my understanding is that Deploy module is trying to solve this problem wholesale across configuration, content, users, the whole works. I can't speak to how far along it is in solving that problem, but that's what it's basically intended for. Then on the other side, there's the Features module, and the Features module is more intended to like take specific functional part of your website, like let's say your event calendar, which consists of a couple of content types, a couple of views, some, you know, like taxonomy terms, whatever it does, and it exports those into a module of its own. And so now you can push around changes to that feature on your site through code instead of having to monkey around with database configuration going back and forth. I know features module currently has some limitations where it doesn't support every type of configuration because some of it's just not exportable in that way. But that's evolving constantly and all the time. So I'd say those are probably the two things to look at. But there's no magical answer other than, like, you know, writing update hooks, which is the way Drupal does it, where you create a function called custom module underscore update underscore, and then you give it a number from one to whatever, and then you just literally stick the SQL or the API functions or whatever that need to get called, and then your deployment process is run update.php. That's the easiest one from a deployment perspective, but the most biggest pain in the butt in terms of like time invested trying to get that to work. So. Unless somebody else knows something.
Yeah, I was going to just say the same thing. Features module is basically an extension or a formalization of a process that we've been using for a really long time, which is basically keep as much of your changes, deployed or not, like through views, through flags, anything like that, keep as many of your changes as possible in code.
Configuration changes,
because we use version control, and hopefully if you're responsible for, you know, rather production sites, you should be using version control anyway. And by moving your configuration changes to code and then writing update hooks basically to make those database changes in code, then move your deployment process through your version control by writing code and then deploying it onto your site. And then if you need to, then deploy
those
update
functions. Are you crying now, Laura?
I'm
just checking. A little bit? Okay,
so,
just checking.
Yeah.
It's a sad, sad story.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of action around this, but it's really not something that's quite been solved. Again, another person on Twitter saying, still no solution for having a staging site and a live site. How do you guys handle that stuff over there at MTV?
Very badly.
I mean, the main nightmare for us is because we use node reference very heavily, it's hard to sync this node with this node with this node and keep the relations together.
Nodes, yeah. Users are adding nodes on
absolutely.
The site.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's quite tricky. We do use feed API quite a lot for some stuff. So if there's stuff we can just sync over that doesn't need to be referenced in the same way, that's one way we do it.
Yeah. Would you like a video?
Have one for that?
Yeah. Do you have a whoa, how's Leaning CCK sound to you? There's also administering Drupal, which kind of talks about a little bit sort of backing things up and some database stuff if you want that.
There was some interesting information as well in Rob and Moshe's talk from the Economist migration that talked about the challenges of moving 3 million users, which I don't think you're quite at the same size with your sites, but there may be some interesting information in there as well, and they did use feed API for a bunch of stuff initially.
And that guy who wanted to start a fight, where did he go? Did you want a Komodo? I think you can get a Komodo for trying to start a fight if you want.
If you had a code.
It's a, full
and then we can have IDE wars, and it'll be fun.
It's fine.
All right.
My name is Sharon Crossa, and I'm from Stanford, California.
The baby's with her mom at the aquarium, Sharon. You can stop asking where the baby is.
Okay, well, I have a backup question. Okay. Then. it's a three-part question. One, will there be Do It with Drupal 2010? Two, will it be in New Orleans? And three, if so, will the rest of the panel come next year?
Well, I can tell you this. We did this exact same panel last year, and we got the exact same question, although the dates were changed slightly. They asked us if we were going to do it this year, and I said, I honestly don't know. And we're here, so I don't know.
does it rate a DVD?
What's that?
So does a question like
sure,
that?
Sure, would you like a DVD? What DVD would you like? We got the we got all of them. What do you like? Do you want to learn some views, advanced theming, theming basics? Views. Yeah, views is a good one. You know, it's a very powerful thing to do. Views, there you go. You can learn views. All righty.
Thanks.
Over here.
Hi. My name's Jim. I'm from Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Woo, represent.
My first question is about mobile apps. A quick perusal of the modules category shows a couple of hits. There's a module, there's a plugin, there's a service also, I believe. I guess you submit your site. I don't know whether they're hosting it. I'm not quite sure how that works. But I'm asking, that's why I want to ask you folks, what success have you had? In, you know, any success, any failures? Is this good? Does this suck? You know, what do you got? Anything on that?
I missed it.
Yeah, generally for us in the UK on the mobile side, we kind of take a different approach in the fact that we think that our site isn't really geared for mobile in terms of the content length or the fact that we've got all these video files that just won't play on the handsets. So we generally take a whole bunch of feeds out of the Drupal site into we work with a couple of different partners, and all the mobile operators have a couple of apps on iPhone and Symbian and a whole other bunch of devices. So we then feed in, you know, sort of direct feeds of content into the phone that's kind of editorially produced by our content team specifically for those mobile devices.
Okay.
So yeah, just write your own app for Symbian or iPhone.
Terrific. Okay. Is there any comment about the module that does exist?
Yeah, I looked into this a bit and I haven't figured it out yet, and I need to in the next couple weeks. So talk to me in early January.
Okay.
But so here's a brain dump of everything I've learned about mobile themes. There is a mobile tools, I believe it's called, module.
Yep, I found that.
Which works off of the Browsecap module, which, if you saw the security presentation, has a vulnerability in it. But hopefully that'll be fixed by the time you go home. Browsecap basically looks at the incoming user agent of the person and says, okay, that person's on an iPhone, that person's on a web browser, whatever. And it directs them according to how you configure it. So you can either configure it so they get just different style sheets, or you can configure it where they get a totally different theme, or you can configure it where they go to a totally different domain. So like m.yourdomain.com or whatever. It's very powerful in terms of how you can configure it. What I haven't figured out how to do yet is like deal with the situation where on the front page of your real site, you have lots of pictures and thumbnails and all kinds of groovy stuff. And on your mobile site, you really just want like a list of titles or something like that. So I haven't figured out yet if you have to recreate all of your stinking views all over again, or if there's another way to do that, or perhaps, you know, making a standalone script that just reads in feeds and stuff like that. If you don't want to deal with any of that and you're on a publicly viewable site, there's also services that you can go to. Google has one, and I'm trying to remember what it's called, but essentially you give it a URL and it just makes a mobile version of your site just by visiting a URL. I can't do that in my situation because my site's an intranet, and we obviously don't want to be farming out our private data to a third party, but if you are a very public site with no private content at all, you know, you can always farm that out to someone third party.
Okay.
Sure.
Want to be sure you get actually on the podcast.
Okay. There was a presentation given at last week's New York City Drupal Camp about mobile sites, and all the slides and everything have been uploaded online. So if you want to get in touch with me, my name is Jill, and I can give you that link at the end of
that's
the presentation.
Awesome.
Okay.
Can I ask a follow-up?
I can also add a little bit to what Angie said in terms of how to solve that front page issue. The mobile tools module now includes the necessary little ctools include file, so that if you're a fan of using panels, which I am, you can have a different panel on the same URL for mobile devices. And you can break it down by mobile devices generally, or a different one for iPhone versus a BlackBerry. And then you can solve that problem of having the same URL deliver radically simplified content because it's using the page manager to deliver a different panel layout with a different set of views, or the same views with a different, you know, parameter or something. And that works. It's only just recently gotten in, but it totally works.
That's great.
Thanks, man.
If I could, I have a follow-up question to a previous questioner who was asking about migration.
Sure.
And how about
you're not getting two videos, though. I'm just telling you
that. No. thank you. How do you port over a straight-up HTML static site?
Oh.
There used to be a module in Drupal 5 that did exactly that. It sucked in HTML and spit out nodes.
Yeah.
I don't know if it got upgraded to 6. But look for it for 5, and even if you've got a Drupal 5 site that you're then upgrading to 6, it gets the content in, which if you have to import a couple thousand HTML files, way faster.
Yeah. Was it cool. Import HTML?
Or? Yeah, I think it may have been import HTML.
Yeah, there you go. Would you like a video?
No, thank you.
Yeah. Well, would you like a Linux Journal T-shirt?
A calendar.
Or a calendar.
Yes, I'll that looks a bit small.
It's a little, would a large work for you there? Oh, the calendar. There you go. All right. Great. Greg Knadison on Twitter comments that that browse cap vulnerability was fixed. And Catherine from the Linux Journal says she recreated all of her views for m.linuxjournal.com, and it wasn't as bad as all that. But let's go over here for the next one.
Hi, I'm Scott Rouse from Missoula, Montana, and it looks like one of the Twitter questions may have answered my question, but I want to know, as a non-developer, relatively new to Drupal, what is your suggestion for a resource to look for writing your first module? Where would you start, or how do you do that?
There's a new Lullabot video coming out. Giving these out, I'm really promoting the heck out of them. But there is a video that Kent's in the process of editing right now called Module Building and API, Drupal API and Module Building. We'll figure it out, what it's called. It'll be printed on the cover of the video. That's how you'll know.
But
revolutionary
decision there.
It talks about that. There are also some really great books, pro Drupal development, and others. Anybody want to comment on ideas that they have around that?
Drupal.org handbook. I'm sure there is a page on there about.
Yeah, Drupal.org handbook is a place to start.
We're doing a training in San Francisco, but that's a little far from Missoula, Montana.
Yeah.
I honestly would look at my earnest suggestion, and not to pimp anything, would be find a very, very simple module that does something like what you want and start hacking it. And that's depending on your style of learning, that's how I learned how to do almost everything that I know, is I started with something that works, picked it apart so I could see how it was doing, and then made it do what I wanted it to do. And if you have a reference guide to go to where you can say, well, okay, how is this doing? That can be a very pragmatic, procedural way to actually understand something.
It's one of the greatest things about open source is that you can look at the source code, other people's source code. And it's also nice that the Drupal handbooks and other guides sort of talk a lot about how to format your code so that there's some consistency with the code across different modules, you know, and the way that it's formatted and the way the comments are and stuff, code comments are and stuff like that. And just Jeff Eaton have something to add in, even though he's not actually sitting up at the table. Go ahead, Jeff.
I'm just a heckler. They're in addition to those resources, and I definitely agree with, you know, get a reference, hack it, you know, use a reference guide, etc. There's also a book specifically about Building Modules in Drupal 6 by Matt Butcher. I can't remember the title of it off the top of my head.
It's a packed book, though.
Yeah, it's a packed book. I think Learning Drupal 6 Module Development. Matt will surely correct me at some point. It's also another one of those resources out there specifically targeted to that.
The one final thing I'd add is that there's a brand new project as of like 2 weeks ago at drupal.org/project/examples or example. I can't remember which one. What they're doing is compiling a set of modules for just like how to use mail in Drupal and how to make a node and how to do this, and the other thing. And they're coupling that with a full suite of unit tests for each module. So that would be a really good place to start as well, because they document the heck out of them. And a great place for you to jump in if you find something confusing, to make little issues to help the next person who comes along.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Would you like a video that talks about coding, although it's not actually, it's the theming basics video. There you go. Right over here.
All right. Hi.
Hi. Hi. Your name, Bowen. Where are you from?
Hi, I'm Bowen from San Francisco. My question is about companies. Most people, most of us work for companies, right? And so in our Drupal world, you know, we like to keep track of what company, you know, someone works for when they register on our site, for all sorts of reasons. And, of course, we could just create a field like a CCK field, or we could create another content type and then node reference that to the company. But, of course, well, our list of companies is, you know, overlaps 99% with the lists of everyone else's list of companies. And, you know, I'd like also to be able to perhaps validate in some way, you know, that someone actually works for a company, maybe even in some simplistic way. And it seems like there must be some sort of module magic or someone else thinking about this. So I'm wondering whether you have any best practices for that.
Oh. I'm trying to think. Sort of the common way, usually, of sort of validating in a very light way. I mean, if you go back to Facebook, right? Early Facebook, you know, that you had to have a .edu email address, and then you get sort of company-focused web application products like Yammer, which basically checks that you have, you know, lullabot.com as your, you know, in your email address. It sort of checks that part. Is that the kind of thing that would work for you? Or?
Well, that's part of it. But I'm also just talking about, you know, the list of companies in the world, right? There's no need for me to maintain that list. There could be a shared list that, you know, like a service that a module accesses or something like that.
That'd be LinkedIn?
For example. Right.
They're opening up their API, and it generally happens that when somebody opens up an API, a module crops up eventually. So
yeah.
I would just sit around and wait for somebody to do that.
That's interesting. The LinkedIn company reference CCK field module.
We've all taken
I think that one rolls right off the tongue.
Also, just
I
clarify,
can hear Rob Loach writing it now.
Exactly. That's thinking the same thing.
Are you asking about developers who work for a shop that employs them, or are you asking about the clients that a shop has had?
No, I'm asking about users registering on our website or any website that, you know, just keeping track of what company they work for.
Oh, I gotcha.
As yeah, registering.
LinkedIn.
As in registering.
So a thing you might want to think about with that is sort of you know, ways to add fields to a registration form and what they actually mean. The sort of conventional way of doing that in Drupal is with profile module and using profile fields. But profile fields are very limited. In particular, you can't do CCK stuff on profile fields in Drupal 6. In Drupal 7, I believe you will start being able to do that. So you might want to go with a node-based profile.
We're doing
okay, you're all set. You got it. But yeah, like the node profile modules, I tend to be a fan of that kind of a thing.
Yeah, trying to go beyond that.
The main issue.
Any of these Stack of Videos might help you with anything that you're working on there? Or a t-shirt.
Hey. The main issue with this is that you're asking for access to a repository of data, and there's a lot of rules around open sourcing of people's personal data and all this kind of stuff. So you'd have to look for an integration module that integrates with an existing service, and the only service I can think of off the top of my head that would even have something near what you're asking is LinkedIn. So, yeah, do the Jeff Robbins approach is go on a beach for a couple of weeks and then come back, and someone probably write it.
Yeah, somebody's going to hear this on the podcast, and they're going to start writing some code.
Excellent. Thank you.
Do nothing. Would you like a small T-shirt? Thank you. All right. Where should we go? Let's go over here. We'll just start doing that.
I'm Steven from Houston, and I'm curious, what do you have for best practices as to how many Drupal sites to put into a single multi-site, and then how to do maintenance in a way that doesn't take forever to take down 40 sites at once and do your work and bring them all back up?
Multi-sites. For some reason, I'm looking to you, Josh.
Okay, well, it really the how many multi-sites can you support? The question, I don't think that there's probably some theoretical limits, but I haven't seen problems with the number of multi-sites. It's the question is how big are they and how much traffic do they get? It's an aggregate question of how much capacity your multi-site server has. The maintenance window question, it depends, again, on whether you're talking about something that's system-wide maintenance, because in that case, you don't really have much of a choice if you're going to, you know, work on some underlying pieces, unless you might want to talk with Allie about her experience doing
stuff like upgrading from Drupal 6.14 to 6.15.
Right, and that's system-wide, right? So there's not a good way of, you can't, because you're upgrading your multi-site, you can't take one site down at a time because you're doing the upgrade for all of them.
Ager, check out Ager. And Ager uses Drush, and there's some really neat stuff happening around that. But I just want to say, like, I think one of the reasons I haven't had as much experience with multi-site stuff I think a lot of us haven't, as we might have, is because there's sort of a philosophical question when you're running multi-sites of, like, are they similar sites? You know, are you rolling out a whole lot of similar sites, or are you just doing a convenience, you know, putting them all on the same code base, because if you have very disparate, different kinds of websites that you're just running on the same code base just to take advantage of Drupal's multi-site capability because it does that, that can be particularly problematic because you have different modules that sort of upgrade at different times, and you kind of want to think about it like, you know, whether it's really a convenience to upgrade all of your stuff at the same time, or if you have a situation. So right now we have a situation I'm a little bit embarrassed to say, but Lullabot.com is a Drupal 5 site. I know, how embarrassing is that, right? To our defense, it works perfectly fine, right? And you know, it's our website, and it's all that thing about the cobbler's children not having any shoes and stuff. But our store.lullabot.com is a Drupal 6 site. We need to get around to upgrading lullabot.com proper to Drupal 6 or Drupal 7 pretty soon. And if I was running those as a multi-site on the same code base, it would be really a problem because we would kind of be stuck with Drupal 5 because we haven't gotten around to lullabot.com upgrading, and we wouldn't be able to use all the great latest features of Ubercart and stuff like that. So, you know, the multi-site stuff that Drupal does is really great, and there's some really great purposes for it, but sometimes it's used sort of, you know, when you could really just use you know, virtual hosts on you know, in Apache and run two different you know, virtual servers, and it'd be about the almost exactly the same performance.
And Jeff is actually 100% correct that is what Eager does, is it helps you manage the multiple different Drupal as an application instances on a server. So you should definitely, if you're thinking about going big with this, definitely get on board the Eager train.
Okay.
That's AEGIR.
Thanks.
Would you like a video?
Sure.
I would offer you a Linux shirt, but yeah, we'll take your pick. Well, that happens.
Thank you.
Yes. Next.
Hi, I'm Bob from Phoenix, and we're just moving to Drupal, so I'm kind of asking you guys the best way to do this.
Can you get a little closer to the mic?
Yeah, thank you. In our situation, we have two sites, a primary and a subsidiary. And of them, some of the content is going to be exactly the same, like glossary terms and things like that. So instead of maintaining them in two places, can you point the second subsidiary site at the primary
database? You're a good candidate
database
for Drupal's multi-site capability.
Or, you know, we thought of just having a cron job every night, taking the primary sites, you know, on specific tables and pushing them over, but I didn't know where the best option for that would be.
What about domain?
Yeah.
There's
a couple of different ways you can handle
the chatter that happens before anyone leans into the microphone, and it's like this, you know, the game shows. We're like, I don't know. Do you want to suggest this one? Should we? I don't know. Is this the right answer?
I've been advised by my lawyer not to answer this question.
There are a couple of different ways you can handle it. You can share databases between multiple multi-site things, and share some of the tables, but not all of the tables.
Yeah, I was going to say sharing probably isn't a good solution here, because when you're talking about content, sharing the node table is an absolute impossibility. It just doesn't work.
Unless you're doing like domain access, and then you impose some node access on there. But I'll let you continue.
All right, but continuing. I was a potential solution that could work really well for you is Feed API, which is basically sort of what you were describing, where you could run a cron job basically and every night you move over the stories. Feed API, you can actually map CCK fields to CCK fields and literally set up the same content type on both sites and then sync them over, and it will literally take those exact Drupal nodes and replicate them on the other site with no work on your part. It just kind of keep them synchronized at all times. And so that's a good solution. And you can set up your path autos to make it so that they keep nice URLs the same between the two of them, even though they'll have different node IDs on each site, of course, because they're incrementing at different rates.
But if you're having shared users and roles and permissions, like you said, a main site and a subsidiary site, is there... And do these need to be totally separate, or can you have just one site that restricts...
Share user logins across them, or...
It's primarily just a managed site that we have, and the reason is we bought another company, and they have their own presence, their own branding, and we need to keep that separate while, you know, over a few years we roll them into our company. And so, but
like,
you know,
FedEx and Kinko's.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I think the actual name of the Kinko's is now FedEx Office. And when they pick up the phone, they say, Kinko's is now FedEx Office. And like when you go to their website, it's Kinko's is now FedEx Office. I think that's a sort of transitional branding. And eventually then they'll just pick up the phone.
There's no module for that, though. Yeah.
If that's the scenario you're talking about, you should think about whether you really actually need two separate sites at all, though. Yeah. Because you may just be able to have a different site with a different theme and a different front page, and that could be it, right? If it's a simple enough difference, if the divergences are not hugely complex, then domain access, it lets you switch some more things like menus and variables around, and that way you don't have a huge distinction between these two sites. They really are one site with mostly the same content, except that if you go in through one front door via that domain, it's got its own front page and it kind of highlights some things, and the other front door has some other elements to it too.
Yeah, I'd be a little nervous about, right, if you're going to eventually merge them together into one, having copies of the same node in two places makes me a little nervous.
Well, and like one of the scenarios would be if you've got your leadership for the two different companies, so there would be some internal pages that split or diverge.
Yeah.
So, cool. Thank you, guys.
Any of these videos might help you. Maybe administering Drupal or site building with Drupal,
or a calendar to plan your migration.
Off to do the calendar. I've already collected all the videos.
Excellent.
Okay. Oh, you've already collected all the videos. Wow, goodness. That's
just time to watch.
Next over here.
Hello, I'm Jason from New Orleans. And I've got a two-part question. One relating to, you had hinted at Drupal 7 adding profile fields for user registration. But then how would I plan now for that, either using the node profile page? I think there's also advanced profile kit out there as well. Which one should I get into now to develop them?
Yeah, so this whole situation is in a bit of a limbo at the moment. So right now what we've got is we've got fieldable users. So you know how you can add CCK fields to nodes in Drupal 6? Now you can add CCK fields to anything. So you can add it to nodes, comments, users, blocks, whatever, that kind of stuff. So we've got that functionality in core. However, we didn't get far enough along implementing everything that profile module does to take profile module out of core. So now you've kind of got this situation. We've got two ways of doing the same thing. We need to resolve that before release. Okay. I would say that if you go... It's impossible for anybody to say at this point, but my feeling is that node profile will probably have an upgrade path to fieldable users, because that would just make sense. If not, core at least is going to keep the old crappy profile module around for people who are still using that. So
did I catch that? Angie Byron just called it crappy.
I call it like it is. So that's what I would say. Advanced Profile Kit is a little bit different. That really isn't a way of storing user data at all. That's a way of formatting the data once it's stored. And that will work with either profile or node profile. So that's, as far as I'm aware, that's just a collection of like panels and style sheets and theming and stuff like that. I don't think that actually does anything with the storage. Your choices are basically between the core profile module and node profile. Core profile is always your safest bet because we're forced to provide an upgrade for path for that because it's part of core, but node profile may be what you need if you need to store more advanced information than what the fields are available.
And then the second part would be how to implement that into then event registration or an UberCart role. Like
just a little
how to integrate that into event registration or an UberCart role.
Would I be using the profile module or the node profile page module?
Want to be brief on this one, Ryan?
What exactly are you wanting to do with the data during checkout?
Event registration. Is it a paid event?
A paid event, and also just granting more permissions to a user role at a member base.
So you're not wanting to collect extra information during checkout? You just want somebody that purchases something to have access to
no,
do more stuff?
Collecting the extra information.
He wants to collect information about them as they register and pay for an event, much like you did when you registered and paid for this event.
Yeah, so UberCart 2, for a time, had some integration with the profile module to have those extra fields in the customer information checkout pane, but that didn't get complete, so I took it out. so that doesn't help you, but I think there's a contrib that does a similar thing. Somebody's going to have to search for that and tweet it, because I don't actually remember the name of it.
Well, you
I did it with Content Profile also. So
you could use Node Checkout.
You got to get that data from the node into the user account somehow.
But if you use if you use Node Checkout, they should actually create a profile.
Find Ryan in IRC.
Node. Oh yeah,
yeah. I think a potential thing is have your use Node Profile or use Content Profile and use Node Checkout, and then when they check out, they actually fill out a profile node.
Yeah.
And so they're actually creating a profile.
Is that they're not logged in, and then you'd have to associate that node.
I guess you would have to do some association later.
You would associate with the user that, that bought it.
He's gonna cry.
We've solved your problem.
Way to go, Nate.
What did we decide? Node checkout.
Node checkout and node
content profile.
Content profile.
Content profile.
Content profile.
And a little bit.
Or search and see if this module I think exists.
A little bit of magic.
Thank you.
Would you, you want a video? Or you want to learn?
Love one.
Site building with Drupal.
Yeah,
we have basic theming. Yeah. Theming basics.
And Jason, actually, Greg also just tweeted up there.
As a suggestion for a slightly alternative way to solve that problem that might get you out of the sticky part, what we ended up doing for DrupalCon San Francisco is we only prompt people to – it's relatively straightforward to have someone create an account when they check out. And then we redirect them. The page after they check out bounces them to fill out their profile. Well, we just allow we use login to boggin. To let them, we trust them. We put a little CAPTCHA there, so like you know, there's a that we feel we're safe from spammers, and they're buying something, so we don't feel like we need to validate their email address since we have their credit card number. and so then they're a user, and then the next screen they go to is the hey, thanks for signing up. Now fill out your profile screen, and that is a it doesn't give you the integrated one form checkout and profile workflow, but it is a little bit cleaner from the Drupal perspective.
I like that. We don't feel like we need to validate them because we have their credit card number.
Yeah, it got checked out. I mean, it's all good.
Over here.
Orange chair.
Hi, Jason Hibbs from Raleigh, North Carolina. I attended the community building session, and they were pretty lucky because they had a pretty good community to start with. And I'm just curious to hear some thoughts on when you're launching a Drupal site and you need to build a community from not too much. Not too many people, I guess.
Building a community from scratch. Well, we had a couple of sessions here. We had one by Mickey Krimmel, who talked about sort of being a community manager and sort of the process of kind of you know, molding and building a community. We also had Ben Brown and John Armstrong talking about building, in particular, the community for Deuce.com. Which already sort of had this sort of celebrity thing going on, but Ben also talked a bit about building a website called consummating.com. And I think I probably should have learned something at those to be able to give you an elegant answer. And you're basically just building it from scratch. I mean, to some extent, it has to do with like SEO kinds of stuff, and you know, sort of which also is an adjunct to sort of marketing and getting it out there, and to some extent, building sort of IRL in real life kind of interactions. You know, just sort of starting to build up the discussion. You know, about it. I mean, a lot of things that I've watched sort of bubble up over time. Including Twitter itself. I was friends with Evan Williams when he started Twitter, and a lot of it was he had a lot of friends, and not in particular because he'd also written Blogger. They had a lot of Blogger friends who started blogging about this new, you know, idea and stuff like that, and obviously Twitter has become quite popular. But, you know, I mean, in terms of, like, you know, it's just kind of that process of building a buzz online, you know. I mean, you guys also sort of fall into that kind of, like, you've already kind of got a built-in thing, and certainly the television stuff, but there's certainly stuff that you need to kind of...
Yeah, we have a community manager that sits in our team, and you know, a lot of people sit there and wonder why he's sitting there on Facebook all day and rather than doing any work. And when we explain, that is what he does. He goes out into the communities and tells them what's on our channels, when we're doing Twitter chats, you know, builds the community in that way. And it's doing really well. We just launched a new channel which didn't have any existing users, had no one already signed up. And within the space of a week, with the TV ad going out, we had like 1 million people sign up on Facebook. Not to our official fan club, that was the problem. It was the unofficial fan club. So we had to go out to the unofficial fan club and kind of try and engage them a bit more and bring them across. And we've done quite a good job of bringing them into the community and showing them, hey, you can come and look at our videos and seeding the content out there. So I think if you just sit and wait for people to turn up, it doesn't always happen.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of Googling, a lot of, you know, trying to sort of find people who would and could be, you know, community members, and then going out and engaging them in conversation, whether it's actual real-life conversation or, you know, virtual conversation online. And then there's, of course, that trick of not looking like you're trying to sell it, like, you know, coming in and just sort of interjecting, go to my website, you know, sort of spamming. You know, it actually is a process of actually, you know, kind of getting in and becoming sort of an authority on that.
And I was going to add, I'm not sure how the videos work for access from last year's Do It With Drupal, but I thought Lane Becker had a really good session last year about really architecting the site so that it's clear what people should expect out of the site that you've built, and then also sort of shepherding them toward the ways that you want them to contribute and making it easy for them to know how to actually get involved on the website. And Drupal gives you the power to make a website that's clear in purpose and in ways for people to do things.
So. Yeah. Would you like a video? Site building sound good for you? Or? There you go.
Hi, I'm Michael. I came in from Phoenix. I've been playing with Drupal for about 2 months now, and among the many myriad of difficulties I've had has been dealing with access to materials, content access, node access, one word, node access, two words, and you need to rebuild your content access profile or something, and the first time it hits you, it makes you think, what did I break and how can I fix it? I was kind of wondering whether you might have some comments about what to use when, and or maybe at least an assurance from Angela that come Drupal 7 that the changes in the underlying architecture would kind of remove it anyway.
Well, I could just say node access doesn't suck as much as it used to.
Which node access doesn't suck as much as it used to?
Generally.
No, the one word or the two words?
Well, so I think you've probably noticed that when you turn Drupal on, you've got all these permissions like create, edit, edit own, edit any, delete, you know, blah, 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 blah. But there's nothing about view or access, except for one global permission that applies across all content of the site. Drupal core doesn't make any assumptions about how you want to control your own node access. What it does is provides a node access system, which is an underlying subsystem, and that's the thing that Jeff's saying doesn't suck nearly as bad as it used to, because it used to be you stuck your whole life on the organic groups module, and that was the thing that was going to run all of the access control on your entire site. Nowadays, it's possible, although still tweaky, to use more than one access control module where it makes sense. So it's hard to answer that question point blank, because there are so many different ways you could possibly do it. I mean, three of the modules that I use the most often are organic groups. Use organic groups when for things like departments or, you know, subcategories or whatever, where you have basically a bucket, and the bucket gets members assigned to it who have access to the stuff in the bucket, and then you have. I'm trying to be Emma, and I'm failing miserably, but
that's okay. I'm using that one too. So.
Yeah, so you know, like, and then the content in the bucket can either be visible only to the people who have membership to the bucket or to everybody, depending on how you have it configured. Something like taxonomy access control will determine access based on how it's tagged. So on the Drupal Association website, we have things tagged as board or association or public, and depending on how that's tagged, that determines who will have access to it. Content access is another one, which will let you do per role or per user access on everything, create, edit, delete, and update and stuff like that. So you really have to sit down and figure out how do I want to control access to my site? Chances are there is a module out there. There's a module out there that does that. It's a question of knowing which one is it. As far as the difference between content access, node access, and node underscore access, I have no idea.
You just have to play with it. Content access, I've used it on several sites and it's worked out well. It works through the ACL module for access control lists. And then the only thing, I guess, directing your decision would be the per user access on nodes. It doesn't really scale. So just be aware of that. I don't know whether things would drive your decision.
We're starting to run out of time. You want a Komodo?
Sure. And then just real quickly, in Drupal 7, the underlying node access system got vastly improved, but so far nothing's making use of it, so I can't answer the question whether this situation will be better, but there you go.
All right, let's... quick.
Yeah, hi, Gary from Houston. It's regarding maybe either the RSVP module or the sign-up module. I'm looking for something that can actually emulate a little bit more of a human touch to it, an event that will have a soft cutoff. If you can, let's say, an event that allows up to 30 RSVPs.
Ish.
But if you are at 25 and suddenly somebody comes in and says, I have 6 more people that I would like to assign to a certain event, that will bring you over to 31. If it's a human on the phone saying, okay, we'll add another seat, that's okay. How can I actually try and do it with Drupal so the site doesn't just cut it off and say, sorry, no, and drop 6 people?
Found like a
there's no ish module yet.
Yeah, I haven't found a really good... I actually sponsored the original implementation of the sign-up module way back when. My experience has just been that there's so many different sort of ways that you want to do that. I mean, especially when you want people to pay to sign up for a thing, it just changes the game altogether, you know? I really don't. Anybody? I mean, sign up module and maybe
flags,
write some patches
any other
for
option.
It or something like that. You know, you can always improve the modules and submit some patches back. There's a suggestion here.
We solved that. I'm not sure how off the top of my head, but.
Yeah, and they all have a different paradigm. So with sign up module, there's no way that you could sign up anyone other than yourself to something, as far as I know. So you would never have that problem because you can only sign up yourself. You can't sign up other people. And so, there you go. Problem solved. Would you like a Linux Journal t-shirt? No. How about a video? Would you like a video?
Yeah, but we don't.
Right.
I asked the Linux Journal people if they'd like a Linux Journal t-shirt. That's yes.
Hi, I'm Carol from Canada.
Canada.
We have a multilingual site. Multilingual sites.
Multilingual sites in Canada. Do tell.
English and French. So we were wondering, we haven't found a module for posting English and French comments on both nodes. So if, like, being able to, like, right now it's sort of English comments on the English node and French ones, but we'd like for people who are able to speak both languages to be able to follow a thread with both languages.
Are they two separate nodes, or are you using two translate? So do you know about the internationalization stuff? So it's the same... No, it isn't.
So it's two separate nodes that are linked. But.
All right, this is a funny one. We had this exact same situation, and the actual funny thing is that I think we actually had, it was even for a Canadian site, it was for French and English, two separate pieces of content, one single thread of conversation. The way we discovered the comment module absolutely refuses to do anything remotely like that. But what you can do, potentially, is not use... You don't need to node reference it because you already have, they're already linked because they're translated. What you can do, either you can just not use the comment listings at all and build the comment listings in views, and then you can get any languages you possibly want of comments. But the problem is that you're actually pointing them at two different pieces of content, and so it's like, oh gosh, you have to do this crazy or thing, like node ID equals this or node ID equals this. So the final thing that we ended up doing was making it so that you always have comments, or we the only built way to do it that I know of, not using any custom code, is to use node comments. So that way, you don't use normal comment module at all. You just use node comments. And you turn on comments on the primary translation, so English. And then when you post a comment, you're actually posting a comment on the English one all the time. So all the comments are actually only on one version, even though they're French and English comments, all on the English node. And then you show the list of English comments on both the French and the English versions of the node.
So would the French node still have the add comment, and then
it yeah, the French node still has add comment, but it actually adds a comment on the English version. So
easy, right? Would yeah. you like a video? We're running low here. Last question. This next question will be the last question. You're welcome to.
It's Sharon again, and no, I'm not asking about the baby. I actually don't have so much of a question.
Whatever you like.
A question as I know there's a lot of higher education people here, and not all of them may have been in the university session, and Twitter doesn't show my tweets. So I'd just like to let anybody who's in higher education know that we're going to be trying to sort of continue to network. We'll be doing something on groups.drupal.org, and then also, you know, probably some additional stuff. So if you give me your business card, I'll make sure you get informed when I know where we are on the group's site and elsewhere. So Sharon Crossa, I look like this.
Jeff, I have a good question.
Okay.
This is, okay, so when Whitehouse.gov...
Name and where you're from.
Oh, Jake from New York.
Brooklyn. Jake from New York.
Okay, so when Whitehouse.gov went to Drupal, that was like a big win. What do you see as the next big win? What do you see or hope would be the next big win for Drupal? For me in New York, like while I was here, the New York Public Library just posted a beta of their site in Drupal, which is huge because for company, I work for a hospital and as researchers, to just tell them that, I mean, my boss is running around saying, Whitehouse.gov switched to Drupal, that's great. But what do you see as like the next big win for Drupal in a sector? I mean, the example would be like you're never, you know, no banks are launching a Drupal site. Or I run into HIPAA issues where no one wants to do open source for HIPAA, but with the government switching to Drupal, that kind of, you know, opens up that notion.
Everyone's got different goals. I know I've talked to Acquia, you know, the Dries and Tom over at Acquia, you know, sort of about like where they're going with it, and you know, this enterprise and sort of starting to really compete in the enterprise market. And I feel like my goals are kind of different. It's like, yeah, it'd be nice if it were easier to use, you know. So it's sort of going up and down. I mean, I guess down meaning, you know, approaching more people and being easier to use, and then up being, you know, more capable of doing, you know, heavy lifting kinds of things. I don't know. I mean, anybody have any thoughts about this? I mean, it.
On the on a related point with White House, a huge thing for Drupal would be to pass whatever hurdles need to be passed and grease whatever palms need to be greased to allow Drupal to appear as a content management service option in the apps.gov directory, so that all of the agencies at the federal, and then there's similar things due to the state and local levels, all those people have websites that all suck. And it would make government better, and it would make you know, our world that much. That's like a huge volume of business. And if we are able to cross that Rubicon, that will be a huge tipping point for the scale of the Drupal community. And I think that's likely to actually happen. So that would be a big win for 2010.
Yeah, that's just one. And I think as we kind of with Dries's keynote this morning, it's sort of. It's all sort of surprising. I mean, it just sort of comes together, and then these things happen, and each one is sort of like, wow, like, where did that come from? Why are there, you know, 1,500 people at DrupalCon? Why will there be 3,000 people at the next DrupalCon? And why, you know, I mean, it's not like it's completely surprising. We're sort of moving there and feeling like it can do that, but it's always sort of surprising when it actually does do that. I mean, when MTV first launched with Drupal, it was surprising. I mean, we were involved with it, and it was really surprising. A little bit frustrating all around, but I think Drupal rose to the occasion in the long run. So we'll continue to be surprised by Drupal in the future, hopefully.
But for now, we'll just wrap this one up and say thanks, everybody, for coming to New Orleans for Drupal 2009. And hopefully we'll do this again next year and see you then. Thanks, everybody.
All right, take care. Thank you.